come on in.
And now, back to the Bill Frank Radio Show.
The kids love him.
And your host,
welcome to paradise,
Bill Frank.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Bill Frank Radio Show here on KVTA News Talk 1520. I'm your host, Bill Frank. I'm bringing fresh perspectives to Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is potpourri. Each of my guests has an interesting topic, no two of which are related. My next guest is a security expert. When people want to know how security really works, they turn to him. We'll discuss enabling the trust society needs to survive from his latest book, Liars and Outliers. Bruce Schneier is an internationally renowned security technologist and an author. Described by The Economist magazine as a security guru, he is best known as a refreshingly candid and lucid security critic and commentator. His latest book is Liars and Outliers, and it explains how societies use security to enable the trust that they need to survive. Regularly quoted in the media, Bruce has testified on security before the United States Congress on several occasions, and he's written articles or op-ed pieces for lots of major publications, including the New York Times, The Guardian, Forbes, Wired, Nature, the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, the Sydney Morning Herald, the Boston Globe, San Francisco Chronicle, and the Washington Post. Bruce also publishes a free monthly newsletter, Cryptogram, and a blog, Schneier on Security, which has a combined readership of 250,000 readers. Joining us from Minneapolis, St. Paul. Hi, Bruce. How are you today?
Hey there.
Well, thank you for being our guest and being a thought leader in this area. Now, this is kind of a heady subject, so I'm going to start with a real seemingly lightweight question, and that is simply this. Is trust broken in our society?
You know, it isn't. You know, we think it is because trust in institutions and corporations is at, in some cases, historic lows. But if you think about it, we trust all the time. I mean, just this morning, I went out in a car. Right, not only trusted the car manufacturer, but all the other drivers. I'm walking on the street, going into buildings, I'm passing people, and no one is attacking me. Right, I'm buying things at stores, I ate at a restaurant for breakfast. And, you know, these all sound pedestrian, and they are, but that's precisely because trust works so well. You know, I mean, yes, we're not trusting Congress, not trusting corporations or banks, but in order to go about our daily lives, we trust thousands of people, and we do it without even thinking. So it's not broken, although it's fraying a little bit.
All right, I like that. It's fraying a little bit, but let me just challenge you right off the bat, because there's a theory, it's known as Dunbar's number, and it was some research that was done that says once human beings like ourselves get to a point where we have like 150 people in our immediate social network, we start to be able to lose track of people, and then it gets harder and harder to trust people. So with the emergence of technology, the internet, Facebook, all of these different more impersonal ways, is trust, you say it's fraying, is trust really on the ropes here?
Well, no, not really, not at all. I mean, Dunbar's number is a great piece of research, and I talk about it a lot in my book. And we've got a trick. And what Dunbar says, he actually did really interesting research. What he did is he measured brain capacity in different primates and compared that with group size. So the group size of a chimpanzee group or a bonobo group. And what he found basically is there's a linear relationship. The bigger the brain, the larger the group size. Human beings, if you extrapolate, have a mean group size of 150. And you see that number a lot. You see it in military organizations. You see it in companies and sizes of departments. You see it in social circles. You see it on Facebook. And when that the number of people we know gets larger, it starts getting impersonal because we can't keep track of them all. It's too many people to know. So humans have a trick here. We don't trust individuals. We trust groups. So, for example, I went to a restaurant for breakfast. I didn't trust the individual people. I mean, I kind of did, right? I trusted the cook. I trusted the server. I trusted the people buying the food that I ate. But I actually didn't. I trusted the restaurant by name. But yesterday, I flew in an airplane. I'm trusting hundreds of people there, but actually I trusted Delta Airlines, right? So we have a shortcut where we can trust people in groups to get around that. And also, we have ability to trust impersonally. So when I'm walking down the street, I'm trusting, you know, very explicitly that none of the people will jump and attack me. But I'm not really trusting them. I'm kind of trusting the whole legal and social system in my hometown of Minneapolis that makes, you know, most people you see on the street, law-abiding and friendly and, you know, not attacky.
Well, that's certainly true in Minneapolis. May not be true here in Ventura County. But my guest is Bruce Schneier. He's author of the book, Liars and Outliers, Enabling the Trust that Society Needs to Thrive. And Bruce, in your book, you really highlight four major systems, if you will, that keep society in check, that will allow us to trust a group, but not necessarily trust the individual within the group. So what are those systems?
So before I give them, let me comment on your comment about Ventura County. You said that there's a joke, but there's a lot of truth in that, right? I can, making this up, use taxis. And I was in Boston last week, and I used a taxi without worrying about it. If I landed in Moscow or Mogadishu, I might not trust the taxis. So it is very contextual. It'll depend on the environment a lot. And when you look at the environment, you see four basic methodologies as we as human beings use to generate trust. So, or to keep people trustworthy, maybe is a better way of saying it. The first one is morals. Right? A lot of us are trustworthy because we know it's the right thing to do. And that's anything that goes on in our head. Feelings of shame, feelings of guilt, senses of fairness. I mean, all of those things largely keep us honest. Most people, most of the time. Right? The second is reputation. And we're very concerned about how others think. And a lot of our behavior depends on us wanting to have a good reputation. Right? So if someone is nice to us, we're nice to them back. Right? There's reciprocal altruism. And that works very informally. Right? If I have a friend over to the house and he steals my sweater, I'm not going to call the police. It's not going to invite him over anymore.
Okay.
And those two mechanisms, morals and reputation, are our primitive security toolkit. Right? We've been using those for as long as we've been in societies. You can see them in other primates as well. I mean, they're not unique to humans. But you know, as we said earlier, society's getting bigger. Right, we have to go greater than our 150-person social groups and organize into towns, cities, and countries, and global organizations, right? You know, the international banking system or the air traffic control system. How do we do that? Well, we have institutions, right? We've invented laws, governments, rulemaking bodies that augment this security toolkit. And we also, unlike every other primate, have technologies. We've invented door locks and burglar alarms and auditing systems and fingerprint detection systems and police sirens and sort of all of those things that we use to, again, you know, and force people to be trustworthy. So you think of a basic decision someone might make: should I steal or not? Right? Most people aren't going to steal because they know it's wrong. Some people aren't going to steal because of what their friends would think, right? They'll be treated badly as a result. Still others won't steal because they'll go to jail if they do. And then the rest of them up there are going to be deterred by your door lock and burglar alarm. So all of those working together keep theft in our society, you know, not down to zero, but down to a manageable level that allows most of us to trust that when we leave our home in the morning, our stuff will still be there when we come home in the evening.
And yet, Bruce, there still is crime. So you have, in this world that you've constructed, we have cooperation amongst most people, but we still have the parasites, the Bernie Madoffs of the world, who will, despite the moral systems, the reputational systems, the laws that are there, will go against that. I think it's kind of interesting. You use a lot of mathematical examples, and I just want to talk about two of them if we can. First of all, you talk about the prisoner's dilemma and what's faced there and how the four systems work together. So talk to us about the prisoner's dilemma, and then I want to extrapolate that out to a broader context of the TSA and airline safety.
Sure, and this is all interesting stuff. I'm fascinated in this. The prisoner's dilemma is something from game theory, and it tries to model this particular decision that someone would make: should I steal or not? So if you think about it, it is in my best interest to steal because I get your stuff. But it is in our collective best interest that no one steals, because then we live in a lawful society and we all benefit. But if you think about it even further, it's really in my benefit to live in that lawful society and also steal. Right? I get the benefits of the society and I get your stuff. But if everyone thinks that way, everyone steals, society collapses. Prisoner's Dilemma is a model that encapsulates that problem. And I use it extensively in the book to tease apart how these societal pressures, I call them, are working to keep people cooperating, keep people honest. But as you point out, yes, there always will be a minority of people who will be defectors, who will be dishonest. And, you know, you can never bring them down to zero, right? We'll never get the crime rate to zero. All we can do is get it down to some reasonable number. And then we have to, you know, accept it and move on. There's nothing more we can do except all we can do, right? You know, more security is often too expensive. It doesn't work very well. So there's a limit into how much security you can have. You get to reach the point of diminishing returns.
And that brings us to the TSA example. My guest is Bruce Schneier.
One of my favorite topics.
Yes, I know it is, Bruce. So talk to us about that. Yes, too much security is expensive. So where does that fit into the TSA? Explain that, please.
Well, TSA is interesting because they are in charge of a very specific type of security. It's security against terrorism at airports. So they're very focused, and I've argued that their focus is actually much too narrow, that by focusing on airports to the exclusion of other things, they're largely wastes of money, and they're ignoring the threat. So I think a lot of what they do is what I call security theater. It doesn't actually make us safer. It just looks good. And we would be just as safe by, you know, not doing most of what they're doing and focusing our anti-terrorism money on intelligence, investigation, and emergency response, right? Not particular plots at the airport.
And I think most people would agree with you. Anybody certainly who's traveled in the last, say, 3 or 4 years, certainly since 9/11, would feel that way as well. My guest is Bruce Schneier. He is the author of the book, Liars and Outliers, Enabling the Trust That Society Needs to Thrive. Now, Bruce, we talk about as our circles get bigger, as society gets larger, there's another impact on this, and that is technology. In a period of time when technology is changing faster than it ever has, what happens if the technology changes too fast and the moral and institutional and security systems can't keep pace?
Well, we don't know, right? This is a new experiment. We're having more technology than ever, and it's changing faster than ever. And examples might be Facebook or, you know, some of the cyber stalking or the trolling, the bad things that happen on the Internet because it's different in ways we don't understand, or identity theft, which is really impersonation crime, but took off because of the Internet. Now, we're right now trying to figure out whether our social institutions, right, that we've evolved over the millennia, can change fast enough as we move into these socio-technical systems. And we don't know. I hope it can, but we're going to see in the next few years.
Well, here's the thing, though, Bruce, because people who act badly on the Internet, let's say, as an example, that becomes a virtuous cycle, that if one person acts badly, then it sort of compounds. Other people see that, and it compounds, and society as we know it on the Internet breaks down. How real is that possibility? Is that distant a possibility as terrorist attack, or is that a real possibility for us?
Well, we see that exact thing happen in microcosms. Particular news groups or websites or discussion forums will break down if a few people act trollish and then egg on a few more people, and there's a vicious cycle, right? And it's a positive feedback loop. You can also have feedback loops in the other direction. If people are acting good and honorable, there are sensitive communities, and that sense of community is self-policing, and the website, the news group, the discussion forum acts well. So we've seen examples of both in the small. You know, my guess is we're going to see pockets of both on the Internet for the foreseeable future, that it's not going to become entirely virtuous or entirely a cesspool. That doesn't make any sense. But, you know, the exact mix of what needs to happen, I mean, sociologists are studying it on the Internet right now because it's new and interesting.
That's very true. My guest is Bruce Schneier, author of the book Liars and Outliers, Enabling the Trust That Society Needs to Thrive. So, Bruce, what do you want readers to take away from reading Liars and Outliers?
You know, I really wrote it in an attempt to understand what's going on in society today. I mean, why the global financial crisis happened, why we're seeing breakdowns in trust, you know, what's going on? And I think I did a good job presenting a model by which people could start to understand some of these larger forces. You know, I'm not sure I have the answers, but I have interesting ways to frame the questions. And I think that adds to the debate. It makes people smarter when they think about terrorism or banking security or election fraud or sort of any of those big issues we're seeing today.
And who should read the book? Is it for the average citizen, or is this something that you want to ship to every member of Congress?
I guess both. I wrote it for my mother, so it's readable by everybody. It's also readable by congressmen, although I honestly expect their aides will read it, not them.
All right. My guest has been Bruce Schneier, author of the book Liars and Outliers, Enabling the Trust That Society Needs to Thrive. Bruce, you've probably piqued the interest of some of my listeners. If they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go?
You know, the easy place is to go to my website. It's schneier.com, S-C-H-N-E-I-E-R. My essays are there. My blog is there. You can read a lot of my writings without even spending any money. There are links to that book and all my books. And, you know, that's sort of the one-stop place for everything I've written.
That is great. Bruce, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on The Bill Frank Show. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks.